Jeff, you have copies for everybody?
No.
I get your only copy?
Yeah.
Mr. Frontmeyer, you read this bill?
Sorry?
You read the printed bill, you read it? I want to do board further questions or comments?
No, as far as the bill goes, it's fine.
You want to, you said count that you passed this? Two passes.
Representative Corbin moves House Bill 312 as amended, being reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions? Honorable.
Courtney?
Yes.
Bill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Bear?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Springer? Rutherford?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Okay. 275.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 275 is the amendment that revises the statutes that relate to what's commonly referred to as the insanity defense. The amendments before you, the legislative council amendments, House Bill 275-4, replace the contents of the bill, so you can start fresh and looking at those. I can summarize the basic elements of the amendments. As such, Section 2 defines specially designated offenses. And this incorporates the amendments that were adopted by the subcommittee at the last meeting. Specially designated offenses are murder, including but not limited to aggravated, any aggravated form thereof. At the last time, we left out murder and the committee added murder in. We'd also revised the list of the felony sex offenses. It now includes any felony sex offense in the first degree in Chapter 163, excluding sex abuse 1. And it adds in subsection 3, which is line 14 of first page of the amendments, rape in the second degree, sodomy in the second degree, sexual penetration of foreign object in the second degree, and an attempt of any of the described offenses. These offenses are described for purposes of the jurisdiction that will be retained by the PSRB. If persons otherwise would meet a test that would allow the PSRB to release them from jurisdictions, if they've done what committed a specially designated offense and are found the equivalent of what's not responsible now, they would remain under the PSRB jurisdiction for a minimum amount of time that is described later on in the bill. The name of the defense has been changed from not responsible for criminal conduct to guilty except for insanity. The changes are made throughout a number of the sections in the bill are conforming amendments. Anywhere we're not responsible or not responsible due to mental disease or defect is found throughout the bill. The changes are in sections 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, where there have been changes made for consistency purposes. The mental disease or defect definition has been changed to specify that it would exclude any or abnormality that constitutes solely a personality disorder. That's found in section 3, subsection 2. It's on the first page of the amendments. The mandate for the PSRB in the cases of persons who have committed specially designated offenses for the PSRB to retain jurisdiction is found beginning in section 13. Page 13 is where the description, of what kind of jurisdiction the PSRB is going to keep over such people is. I wanted to point something out to the committee. I believe that one of the provisions, as it was adopted the last time in the amendments, if I haven't misunderstood the committee, I believe that it was inadvertent. We had originally, in those amendments, provided that, as I understood it, we meant to have a minimum jurisdiction of 30 years for a certain kind of aggravated murder, which is now mandatory. That would be the maximum that the PSRB would hold somebody who otherwise would have passed the test to be able to be discharged. We're saying PSRB has to keep them for 30 years in aggravated murder of one sort and 20 years for another. Well, in the original version, the amendments had included or an attempt to do so, and I didn't believe that it was the intent for the committee to include attempt, and I believe that the committee meant that the attempt provisions would fall within the regular sorts of guidelines that covered the rest other than aggravated murder. If that's incorrect, we can go back to the language of the Dash 2 amendments. But the way that we've revised it here, PSRB would retain jurisdiction for 30 years for a person that does the one kind of aggravated murder. That's in subsection 8, sub A. 20 years in the case of a person that's been placed under their jurisdiction for the other type of aggravated murder or for regular murder, which would otherwise be a life sentence. And C has been modified to encompass all the other offenses, including attempts, that would make them subject to jurisdiction for the maximum period for which they could have been sentenced upon conviction.
I believe that's correct version of the subcommittee's action. Call on the other members of the subcommittee if they disagree. Okay.
That same change, the same changes that you're seeing in that subsection 8 there also appear in sections 14 and 15. Section 18 of the bill on the last page, 23, amends the statute so that leaving the state while under PSRB jurisdiction, assuming that it's not an approved leave, is included in the escape statute so that extradition would be available. So the crime of escape in the second degree is further described to include that a person, while otherwise under the jurisdiction of the PSRB, departs from the state without authorization of the board. Section 19 provides that the district attorney will submit, and this was a new amendment adopted by the committee to fill in the state court administrator. They would submit to the state court administrator in such manner as the state court administrator shall prescribe statistical records with information having to do with the assertion and trial mental disease or defect defenses. The subcommittee asked that by the time we consider this before the full committee, that Betsy Belshaw would be informed of this provision and to be able to respond to it. There was one other change, and that was a clarification that we made in Section 8 of the bill, which doesn't change the substance, but the committee had given me permission to work with legislative counsel to clarify that language.
Which language?
It's in Section 8. It's on page 3 of the bill. As it had originally been in the amendments before the committee, the underlying language read more that if a person were convicted of a specially designated offense, in fact, persons that are found guilty except for insanity are not convicted. This is to clarify that anybody who commits what would otherwise constitute a specially designated offense, or would otherwise be a conviction for those described crimes, would be assigned jurisdiction of PSRB.
Representative Hill, I think you were involved with staff, perhaps other members, in working on the revision of the list of specially designated offenses. Is that correct?
Yes.
I think you had raised a concern, on the one hand, that there might be omissions, and I think Ms. Zuckerman had rightly pointed out that perhaps the original bill included offenses which were not appropriate to include. So this final list really moves, I think, in the direction of both those concerns. Are you satisfied with that list based on your own work with staff on it?
Yes.
Linda, we were in effect asking you to examine it also with whatever other members were involved from the standpoint of the concern about the inappropriate inclusion. Did you have any further concern or comment from that standpoint?
No. No, the real concern I noticed had been the attempt part that I think I inadvertently supported.
Ms. Belshaw, any comment on that last section? I was afraid you would.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Betsy Belshaw. I'm the State Court Administrator. I plead guilty to the offense of not following this bill. And frankly, I can't think of anybody else to dump the statistics collecting role on. Right now, I don't need any more work, but I do need some help in defining exactly what kind of information you're after. I have no idea. If I'd followed the bill, I might have a better concept of what kind of information you're after, but I have no idea what to set up in terms of a statistical program to get you the information you're looking for. I understand the concern with the insanity defense, and I know states that collect information ad nauseum about these cases, everywhere from how many of these cases to what was the result of the psychiatric evaluation. And I don't think you want to go to that extreme, but I need some assistance in defining what kind of information you want.
Okay, I prefer not to try to amend the bill at this point, but let's see if we can reach some agreement among us as to what specific information this section is intended to cover. I assume, of course, at the minimum, we're talking about we want to know the number of cases in which the defense is asserted. Not so fast. I would assume we would want the number of cases in which the defense is stipulated after being asserted, the number of other cases in which it is tried,
and the disposition. You mean going to trial?
As an issue. The and the results, the disposition, its disposition as an issue upon trial. What else? Call primarily, I guess, on the subcommittee. Linda? In a minute.
Any other aspects, you mean?
Yeah.
Another one that was raised, but I don't know whether it's one that the committee felt was important to identify, and I don't know if Betsy's collecting it would resolve the issue. It seems like more would have to be done, but there was the question of which arm of the test people were found not responsible under, whether it was appreciate criminality or conform conduct, but there's no consistency by the judges. Some of them just say the whole thing and don't identify which one they're really finding it under, so I don't know whether that was the only other one I can think of particularly that was brought up, but without some other restriction that way, I don't know how collection of the information from the state court administrator would be very revealing.
Betsy, maybe a bit unorthodox to do it this way, but why don't we leave it at that for the moment and let us talk with the board and perhaps the district attorneys, others who have been here in connection with this issue, and see if there are other specifics they think it would be useful to have in this kind of a breakdown.
Okay.
For purposes of your directive to the DAs.
Okay. I plead only to keep it small. Right now we collect very primitive statistics, number of filings, number of dispositions, that's all. And we have no capability to do anything above that. So anything is going to incur a major revision of our statistical reporting system. I ask that you keep that as limited as possible for the next 2 years.
You have our sympathy, as you know.
And if anybody can think of anybody else on whom to put this burden, please call me.
All right, are there discussions of the dash four amendments?
We need to take the fiscal issue. Yeah. Decide how we're going to deal with it.
Excuse me.
I think I have a way.
Chairman, isn't there an organization that keeps, an agency that keeps track of criminal statistics that they publish annually for working? Is the Justice Criminal Community?
There is. That's right. What's that group called?
Publishes an annual poll.
Crime Analysis Center.
Yes.
Used to be with Oregon Law Enforcement Council.
Well, right.
Now it's the Department of Justice.
Perhaps they may be
looking forward.
More appropriate. So keep detailed statistics on crime in Oregon. Representative Courtney's shaking his head, so I'll back off that idea, Chairman.
I think he was using what a brilliant idea that was, just trying to wake up.
Yeah.
Representative Hill, let me suggest this. If this bill passes the House, Betsy, why don't you give this some further thought? We might invite the same of the Attorney General and others who are interested in the statistical aspect of this as well as other aspects, and if on further reflection there is a more appropriate place for centering this data, I'm not sure it's an issue of such intensity with this committee that if you were to approach the Senate committee with a proposed amendment, we would have a problem. In concurring, if they were recommended change.
Please don't leave the PSRB out of your consideration. Do not leave the PSRB out of your consideration.
You mean as the place for the data? Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that you've got three now areas to look at all of them.
All right, let me ask first, are there any questions about the form of the amendments, dash four amendments? Okay, then before we take final action on the bill, We need to discuss a fiscal impact issue that has arisen with regard to the change of the name of the the form of the verdict. The mental health division has asserted to the committee that in its opinion, this particular change would cause the loss of some amount of federal funds. I don't have the fiscal impact statement.
Yeah,
there it is. Do the non-subcommittee one members have this fiscal impact statement? Well, the estimated dollar amounts are $663,000 for 83-85, and $1.1 million approximately for 85-87.
What triggers that, Mr. Chairman? What are you saying?
This verdict, this is the opinion of the Mental Health Division, this verdict will result in the patient having been having the same legal status as a person who is convicted of a crime. Oregon law has been interpreted as preventing the state from collecting from anyone who has been found guilty and is being detained in custody, whether in a correctional institution or Oregon State Hospital. Even if Oregon law did not prevent billing, federal Medicare and Medicaid laws do not permit the payment of costs for those found guilty and treated in a division institution.
Chair.
Representative Courtney.
Just for the sake of discussion for the members of the full committee, but who are not on the subcommittee, Chair, I think, accepts this position in the Mental Health Division. I don't. They did not contact the federal officials and ask them their opinion of this. They basically did it in terms of some research, plus the opinion of one Walt Berry, who I believe, I do not know if he's, I guess he's with the Attorney of the Department of Justice. When we were putting this bill together in subcommittee, you'll note the phrase guilty except for insanity. Not the word guilty but insane, but guilty except for insanity. Those are the exact words that Jeff Rogers, the former and first PSRB chair, came up with. And the reason he chose the word except was to make it much different than a guilty but insane verdict. That in his opinion, once you say guilty except for insanity, you are saying the person, you're not saying the person's guilty, if you will. Therefore, I take very strong exception to the position of the Mental Health Division on this. If you may recall, even the ESRB people felt that the expression of guilt, the word itself, would help them in some way deal with the people they have in their institution. I'm not mistaken, the Attorney General's here and Del Penn is here. All three versions of it dealt with insanity plea felt we should do something with the word guilty, that would, in terms of dealing with the public's perception of this plea, the jury's perception, it was more beneficial. And we struggled mightily, as I remember that day in the subcommittee, and I just think that when you say someone's guilty except for insanity, that's much different than saying guilty but insane or guilty. So at this stage of the game, I think that we ought to continue ahead with the bill, put it to the full floor, let the opponents, if you will, on this basis, continue to make their case a little bit stronger in terms of legal analysis or financial analysis or dealing with the pros back in Washington, D.C., or maybe they can get an Attorney General's opinion or official opinion. I'm just not there, and I do not accept the position that this is a guilty verdict.
Representative Courtney, I want to just correct one thing you said. My comments are not intended to say I agree with the opinion. I am only raising to the committee the fact that this is the asserted position of the division, and it is going to show up as a fiscal impact statement with the bill. Now, when we had the prejudgment interest bill before us the other day, the House proceeded notwithstanding the fiscal impact statement, in part, at least as far as our caucus, on two bases. One, on its face, I think a lot of the members thought the fiscal impact statement was methodologically absurd and unacceptable. But secondly, I represented the caucus that House passage, notwithstanding the asserted fiscal impact, could also be addressed on the Senate side through further analysis of that issue in the Judiciary Committee and by the Senate President, subsequently referring the measure, if he believed it was necessary to do so. This is the only difference here, so far as I suppose the issue is concerned, isn't whether the calculations are accurate or not, or the methodology is sound in reaching the numbers. The issue is it or isn't it going to forfeit the money? I think it's either all right or all wrong. It's not a question of quarreling over what the estimate is. So that's the twist here that's a little different from the other case. Now, we can procedurally handle it the same way and see what happens. We can send it to the floor without a subsequent referral recommended and discuss it further with Representative Katz, others, see if the House wishes to go ahead and at least send it to the Senate if the bill is otherwise acceptable, with the understanding it will be addressed over there as a subsequent referral, perhaps. We're late enough in the session where I think if members feel there can be a reliable arrangement of that sort, it probably makes sense to try to go ahead and see whether the substantive committees are prepared to address it as policy before time is spent in Ways and Means determining whether whether there's a fiscal impact.
Chairman?
So that's where we are on that.
So we get something akin to a revenue ruling from the federal agency involved, setting forth our argument on why this language is in effect a guilty finding, except that.
Now, I was a little bit unclear myself why the federal authorities had not been directly asked the question. I guess there was some reason. I would propose we pursue that further with legislative fiscal and if the bill leaves this committee and see if we can't get some somewhat less circuitous route to the same answer. This really rests on conducting a survey of three or four other states who are unable to collect when a patient is found. Now, in that case, the verdict was guilty but mentally ill. Now, that is different.
Mm-hmm. It's conjoined. This is an exception to the
guilt. Mr. Attorney General?
I think that given a week or so to work on it, knowing that this is now an issue for the committee, our department could make direct contact with appropriate federal government lawyers for the purpose of finding an answer to this question, yes or no. That should not, in my judgment, be a basis for you to delay action on the measure. Otherwise, we can call that to the appropriate attention of the senator, perhaps even for the third reading.
Well, certainly any help you could provide, we'd appreciate. But at this point, there has been no, as I interpret the report of the division, there's been no direct contact with the federal authorities. There, Mr. Attorney General, there also is also a reference here to Oregon law. Well, you'll take a look at the Mental Health Division statement. Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2075 as amended be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
I guess, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Smith?
The Attorney General's had a keen interest in this bill, and I would appreciate some guidance from him. Not being on the subcommittee, perhaps the subcommittee heard from him frequently, but any final thoughts or position from the Department of Justice would be helpful.
Well, okay, I don't want to open this as a public hearing.
No, I'm just, not
under a thumb. If you want to make comments at this point briefly, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I'd like briefly to be accompanied by Mr. Penn, who represents the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Each one of us has about one point. I think I can make mine very briefly. Really, I'm very disappointed that the reforms made in the insanity defense are as modest as they are. I can't quarrel with any specific change that you have made other than the one that Mr. Penn will identify. certainly it's an area that I think has been needful of much more dramatic action than is evidenced in the apparent willingness of the committee so far. I would ask the committee one more time to consider deletion of the volitional aspect of the test that is presented in Section 3 of the bill that you have before you. That is conforming one's conduct to the requirements of the law. The Blue Ribbon Panel of the American Psychiatric Association, which most recently delivered its report in December of 1982 and constitutes the latest collection of expertise with respect to the mental health elements as they relate to the law, has recommended such a change nationally, and I believe that's reinforced by Oregon's own experience. And I would urge the committee at least to consider that far, reforming a test so that at the intake level, which is the problem that we see, the trial level with a test that's excessively broad and expensive, that some significant reform could be achieved. Thank you.
If I can only very briefly comment about that without using examples. My name is Dale Penn, and I'm with the District Attorneys Association. I'm a deputy district attorney in Marion County. Without giving specific examples, which we kind of went over at the subcommittee, there is the problem that when the ALI test was formulated and was adopted in Oregon back in 1971, this volition concept, ability to conform one's conduct to the requirements of law, that was a new addition to Oregon law. And it was a new addition to the ALI test, and it was because basically the psychiatric profession stood up and said, the state of the